weeks now, small groups of protesters across the country have been calling for an end to state shutdowns and COVID-19 government oversight. Last week, protesters in Lansing, Michigan, stormed the Capitol building and demanded to be let into the House chambers as legislators deliberated extending their state shutdown. Many of these protesters were carrying assault rifles, wearing tactical gear. Some were holding images of Confederate flags, swastikas, and nooses. While some, including Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, have said these protests are fueled by racism, the protesters themselves say they're fighting for their individual rights. Here's protester Joni George in Lansing.
I know there's people that are compromised immune-wise and people that are older, weaker, and they can't take it. They're free to stay in their homes. That's what freedom is. This isn't freedom.
But what kind of freedom is it when it comes at the expense of others? That's the question Ibram X. Kendi asked in a recent article he wrote for The Atlantic. Ibram is the director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University. In the United States, Black and Brown communities have experienced higher numbers of COVID-19 cases and deaths than white communities. The freedom these protesters are calling for could increase the spread of the virus and further this viral disparity. Ibram X. Kendi and Keisha Blaine, a W.E.B. Du Bois fellow at Harvard University and an associate professor of history at the University of Pittsburgh, joined us to talk about this. Ibram said that the legacy of choosing individual freedom over community health can be traced back to the psyche of slaveholders.
Slaveholders wanted to live in a state where they had the freedom as individuals to not only enslave people, but to disenfranchise people, to exploit people, to impoverish people, to rape people, and on down the line. And they felt any restriction on that ability to enslave, to disenfranchise, to even kill, was a restriction on their freedom. And they spoke about it in that way and ended up succeeding from the union because they felt the union was not providing them with their freedom. And I contrast that more individual freedom with community freedom, which is the freedom of enslaved people from slavery or a community from disenfranchisement or from exploitation or poverty. And this freedom from is more or less a freedom from harm, a freedom from even the harm of those individuals who do not care about the lives of the rest of us and want the freedom right now even to infect us.
Mm. Keisha, through history, when we have seen this mentality of prioritizing individual freedom and states' rights, what has been the result of that and the impact of that on Black and Brown communities specifically?
The result has been catastrophic. In fact, as we all know, we fought an entire war. Because of this very argument, people will say that the Civil War was ultimately fought to protect states' rights. Yet, as Ibram pointed out, when we really get to the heart of the matter, it was a question of how do you protect states' rights when the rights that states are demanding are the rights to keep Black people enslaved? If we went down the line of states' rights, and if we allowed slaveholders to ultimately have their way, I would be enslaved today. And so in the end, I think it's important to be careful when we begin to talk about individual rights when it ultimately comes at the expense of someone else's rights, or even the individual freedom when it comes at the expense of someone else's freedom.
Ibram, I want to connect some of those ideas to what's happening today, to the protests that we're seeing, people who adamantly want things to reopen again. When protesters today are saying that they are fighting for their freedom, what do you think that they mean by that?
Well, I believe they're saying their freedom to harm, which essentially means their freedom to infect. And I think I'm really seeking to contrast them with other Americans who recognize that if we open states back up, then the likelihood of social distancing, of course, declines. Then the likelihood that more people are infected and even die rises. But these individuals aren't thinking about what's best for the community. They're only really thinking about what's best for themselves, even if their actions, even if these states reopening will harm the community.
Mm. Ibram, in your piece in The Atlantic, you said that the individual freedoms these protesters want could come at the expense of not just the community at large, but specifically Black and brown communities. Can you talk about the disproportionate impact of this outbreak on Black and brown communities?
Sure. So last I checked, about 18 states have already reopened. About 16 of those 18 states, those states have released racial demographic data. Of those 16 states, 13 of those states, 13 of those 16 states where we have racial demographic data that have reopened, people of color are suffering disproportionate harm from COVID-19, meaning, according to the racial data, people of color are more likely to be infected and or more likely to have been killed by COVID-19, and especially Black people. And so, to give an example, in Alabama, Black people comprise about 43.51% of the coronavirus cases and another 45% of the deaths, but Black people only make up about 27% of the population. And that racial disparity is indicative of what's happening in Mississippi and Tennessee and Colorado and South Carolina, as well as Georgia. And these are all states that have reopened. There's also states like Utah, in which Latinx people are 14% of the population, but 36% of their coronavirus cases, or even in Idaho, where the death disparity among Native Hawaiians is the highest in any group, or even Wyoming, where Native Americans make up 2.7% of the state, but 18% of the cases, coronavirus cases. So these racial disparities are pervasive in the very states that have opened.
Last week in Michigan, hundreds of protesters gathered at the state capitol. Some of them were carrying rifles. We've seen at some of these protests imagery of Confederate flags, even swastikas and nooses. Keisha, are we seeing any similar protests, armed protests against shutdowns in other countries, or is this a uniquely American thing?
It seems to be uniquely American. I'm not aware of armed protesters in the same fashion. I'm certainly aware that there are protests happening across the globe. I was reading even this week about several different protests happening in Italy, and as we know, they have been devastated by COVID-19. And I noticed, for example, hundreds of business owners, those who owned restaurants in particular and bought restaurants and bars, decided to turn on their lights at a particular moment and then turn off their lights at another moment as a sort of symbolic gesture. I mean, so all of these things are protests, whether people are protesting the stay-at-home laws or whether people are protesting, others are protesting even the efforts to open up Italy. That's a very different kind of discourse, I think, and a very different kind of response. If we are talking about stay-at-home orders, and if there is resistance to people staying at home in this moment in order to ensure that the coronavirus does not spread further, then why would a group of people show up at the state capitol in Lansing, Michigan, with guns? What does this have anything to do with the coronavirus? It's obvious that if you're showing up with guns, you're showing up to intimidate. You're showing up to ultimately terrify individuals. And it's not surprising that these guns appear at the very same moment that we also see people with Confederate flags. We see people with swastikas, with nooses. All of these are connected. And so once again, what's happening is in this moment, people call upon the First Amendment, then they call upon the Second Amendment, and they use these as covers to try to explain away why they are in fact engaging in practices that are intent to terrorize groups of individuals. And so that is exactly, I think, what's happening with this. And it's also telling that they're showing up also without any face mask, which in and of itself is sending another message about the ways that they don't necessarily see COVID-19 as a threat to themselves, clearly, because they're not even following recommendations that are given by the CDC. So again, coronavirus becomes the cover, Second Amendment claims become the cover, even First Amendment claims become the cover. But in the end, what you're finding, at least in the case of Lansing, Michigan, quite frankly, are a group of white supremacists, many of them who want to interrogate and want to intimidate people with these guns.
Mm. Ibram, I want to give you the last word here. It sounds like what you're saying is the very concept of freedom means something entirely different to different groups of Americans, and that distinction is drawn across racial lines. So where does that leave us in a country that has largely centered its identity on the concept of freedom, however flawed that might be?
I think where it leaves us is a recognition that even something as basic, at least seemingly basic, as the concept of freedom has always been highly sort of contentious. And I know the enslaver and the enslaved had completely different conceptions of freedom. And that psyche of the slaveholder, that any restriction on their individual ability to do what they want, even if those restrictions are preventing them from harming other people, that is taking away their freedoms. That psyche, that idea, I think lives on to this day. And so that's how when you have, for instance, Black people who are protesting against the ability, the freedom for police officers to shoot and murder, or even a regular citizen to shoot and murder anyone who they fear, they want that freedom. And we're saying, no, you cannot have that freedom. You should not have the freedom to harm people indiscriminately in the way slaveholders did. And so I think that this is something that I think Americans have been fighting over, the very notion of freedom, from the beginning.
Ibram X. Kendi is the director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Center at American University and a contributor to The Atlantic. And Keisha Blaine is a W.E.B. Du Bois Fellow at Harvard University and an associate professor of history at the University of Pittsburgh. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.